Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come, baby, come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
Meanwhile, in New Jersey.
So, Marissa, what talking points do you want to hit on in this week's episode?
Well, Jackie, let's talk about how the film addresses the patriarchy. Ooh, and representation of marginalized people. Ooh, and even philosophical ramifications of good versus evil in horror.
We can point out the triangle boobs, talk about the blood splatter, and the practical effects. And also the male gaze?
My gaze at the males.
Hi-yo! From feminism to fangirling, the Jersey Ghouls cover all the bases of horror from a woman's perspective.
New episodes are uploaded every other Sunday.
Just search Jersey Ghouls to find us on social media and your favorite podcasting app.
Everybody, and welcome to another episode of Horror Movie Night. And this week, we're talking about a film that could not wait to sexualize a teenager as if it was an adaptation of Lolita, The Crush.
That did come up in the Lolita, the 97 one, came up as a suggested viewing immediately after this on Tubi, which I imagine if we all watched it on Tubi.
I watched it on Prime.
I avoided the commercials. No, I gotta support my boys over at Tubi, my boys and gals over at Tubi.
Matt, I know you were loving that intro montage and music.
Dude,
that
I literally wrote, this right is there. The most mid-90s opening credits I could possibly imagine.
All the way down to production designer being Michael Bolton.
Michael Bolton. I did catch that. Man, talk about seeing a bunch of names I didn't anticipate seeing. Like, I knew, the only thing I knew when I hit play on this movie was Alicia Silverstone, because that was the box art that I remember seeing. Then all of a sudden it's like, I'm like, is that fucking the Dread Pirate Roberts driving that car there? And then I see Kirkwood Smith's name pop up, and I'm like, Red from that 70s show? And then I see Amber Benson. I'm like, fucking Tara from Buffy is in this movie?
That was the surprise for me.
That was a fun surprise, yeah.
I was like, what is happening? But I would love to sometimes I think it'd be fun to just re-edit 90s opening credit sequences with the song that you assume they probably want it there but couldn't afford. Because this is some, like, the band's name was like Star Club, which I'm like, all right, so that's like somebody's friend's band. Like,
that's basically Jingle Punks in the 90s. That
exactly.
It's not any different.
So hear me out. Obviously, it wasn't this song that they wanted, because this song came out 3 years after the movie was released. But in my head, I was hearing Delamitri's Roll to Me during that opening credits.
Yeah. Like,
but it was, like you said, it's that jingle pop. It's that, like, feel good, just like, everything's great in LA. It's
like, and Roll to Me happens right when Alicia Silverstone rollerblades out, which she's going to have a cameo in our Roller Rink movie.
Okay,
Patreon
perfect.
Listeners. Because she has to appear. She has to appear as her character from The Crush.
Yeah.
Which version did you guys... Well, Matt and I saw the one where they her name is...
Adrina in our version.
Really? Because I thought that it was Darina in ours.
No, we got the Adrina version.
Okay, so Darina was the original word name. Darian.
Vice versa.
Darian, I'm sorry. Darian, because the guy who wrote the movie wrote it and used the girl that did that shit to him when he was a struggling writer in L.A. He used her real name, and she and her family fucking sued them. So it got changed to Adrian,
sure.
But every other version, except for the one DVD version, I want to say, she's Adrian or whatever. But there's the one, there's this one version out there where she's still Darian, which is so funny to me.
On Tubi, it was Adrian.
Okay.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah, I picked this just because we're in the month of love. Right, yeah. Like so.
That is, we're kicking off February right with the crush.
Right, we Valentine's been done on the show, right?
Yeah.
Sadly, and then My Bloody Valentine's been talked about extensively, even if not an actual episode for this show. But I also my episode did not fall on Valentine's Day or near it, so I needed to do something with love. And I don't know what I knew that Scream Factory put out The Crush a while ago and Alicia Silverstone was in it. And I mean, I really went in blind. You know, I keep saying that I'll do a little bit more research before I pick a movie. I didn't think this one was uncalled for by any means, but I definitely didn't do any more. I definitely didn't follow my word and do any more research before I picked this movie. What a ride.
But no, there are things worth talking about because this is far from the worst movie we've ever watched on this.
Oh,
show.
Yeah, yeah.
It moved and it went down fast, but I have some problems.
Yeah,
but I do have some compliments. I'm going to start with my first compliment. This has nothing to do with the movie.
Make it a compliment sandwich.
I'm going to repeat the same thing that I said on a very recent episode of Before My Time about Cary Elwes. I think that's how his last name is pronounced.
Yules?
Sure. Talk about a dude born in the wrong time, though. Because this is a guy who, like, at the most is remembered for Princess Bride, Saul, and maybe Robin Hood Men in Tights. Had this man been an actor in the 30s... He would have been one. He is such a like 1930s, like everyman, like this perfect combination of like Jimmy Stewart everyman, but also mixed with like an Errol Flynn, like swashbuckler, that this dude could have crushed in roles that we just weren't making movies for at the time that he was an actor, which is why it's like when people think of him, it's like, oh, yeah, the guy from Princess Bride, because that was perfectly suited for his everything.
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. And you this forget movie, that he's not British. So much. Because he's been in The Crush and he was in Saw. And
the only time I knew he was British in this movie was when he was talking about his car. It was, oh yeah, when he revealed the new paint job plus cocksucker on his car.
Yeah.
Was the only time I heard the British accent come out. Every other time, and it made me look him up again because to be like, is he British or was this just like a weird, yeah, he did it well. He covered it well.
Yeah. Is that his butt or is that a stunt butt?
So we got to talk about the butt.
Stunt butt.
Well, there's one that I know was not Alicia Silverstone's butt. But is that Cary Elwes' butt?
Who knows? Here's my question. If it was a fine butt, it was very well toned. It was great. Mm-hmm. But
the wax job was solid.
He's got a 14-year-old girl in his house.
He's showering and he's cool with it. What the fuck?
Well, it's not even just that. He doesn't close the bathroom door all the way. Like, he's
been in there numerous times.
Yeah, and like, also this is like a giant breaking suspension of disbelief. That man is bare ass naked, and in under a minute, in a tiny bathroom, comes out fully dressed, like he's
shamed.
Fucking Superman changing in a fucking phone booth. I couldn't believe it. I'm like, what the fuck is? Why is he not? Okay, so actually, this leads
he's
to a question.
He's not a good man. He's not a good man.
No, and that was the other thing I wrote down. Like, I did not need them to kiss. Like, I think that this movie would have worked so much better.
Yeah.
If it was strictly that he has never once did anything to even remotely give her an implication of any interest, but like him being like, oh, if I was 10 years younger, or like kissing her on that bridge, I'm like, fuck, like now your hero is very much a hero with quotation marks because he made some big fucking mistakes.
Yeah, I wonder what pop punk band he was in.
Dude, but credit where credit's due, Alicia Silverstone does do a great job of, in the beginning of this movie, just playing the most obnoxious teenager.
Oh my
that
god,
you're
this
like,
movie she reminded me of how fucking awful teenage girls are.
She played it really
well. She was only 15.
Right, yeah. So like
she wasn't stretching
she was
here.
Of age.
Yeah.
She was of age, underage, for the part. Like, it was.
I love that the fucking director was like, "Let's get her naked in this." And dude, Cary Elwes of all people was like, "No."
Yeah, yeah. The fucking. I loved the trivia being like they pushed for Alicia Silverstone to be naked. It's like, nah, dog. Like you don't do that. This movie's irresponsible. Like I love sleaze, and I love
irresponsible.
It's a super irresponsible movie,
and it spawns so
laughably irresponsible.
Yeah.
It spawns so much that it makes it even more irresponsible. Like, that's the best word for it. Like, thank you, because that puts into such a small, perfect little package with the bow why this movie makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, like, I don't think that it, like, doesn't, like, deserve a place or isn't a fun, like, whatever. Like, I mean, on its own, but what stems kind of from it and because of it and like all of this, like, it's just icky and I felt it was irresponsible, especially because of what Matt said, like, because of some of the choices that his character makes, Cary Elwes's character makes. It totally makes it like, oh, you know, he was just a guy who thought a thought, who did a little thing, and then this crazy girl came after him, and could you believe it? And it's like, okay, fucking, like, cool your pies. This Me Too movement is actually happening because of you. I didn't think
well,
that.
Well, and
but
you
I
know,
just, like,
like, I feel like this movie kind of did a disservice to the world because and this, maybe I'm putting too much on it, but I think that, you know, it really,
I mean,
it spawned a lot of movies that were very similar thrillers in the late early, like, mid to late 90s, and I think that it kind of encapsulated this weird white cis male fear of like a woman actually having power over your life. And being like, it wasn't me, like, I didn't really do anything. And if you take Cary Elwes' character out of being an actual, like, semi-teen fucker, because he talks like one, it's weird.
Yeah.
Go on any Reddit post where some guy, and I think a lot of it is fake. I think that it's like this weird wish fulfillment thing that lonely fucking incels do on Reddit, or at least they used to. I really don't.
But it's still fucking creepy.
Well, no, yes, but what I'm getting at is that there's this concept of, like, I'm not Brock Turner. I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And, like, this woman or girl is arguing. She's ruining my reputation in my life by suggesting that I essayed her. And, you know, it's like that she's insane, you know, and hysterical, basically. You know, like, hysterical as a word is, like, the perfect encapsulation of what I think these guys that I'm talking about, like, on Reddit posts and things like that. And they congregate and they talk about how, you know, like, if we go through and actually follow, like, if we go through all the rape kits that are in storage and all of the allegations that are just caught up in the you know, the gears of the court system in America, that all these innocent white cis men are going to be Brock Turnered. You have their lives ruined over nothing. I mean, and obviously Brock Turner I'm using as an example because he got off because he was rich and he did something terrible. But they see him as kind of like this example of, like, he didn't do anything that bad, you know? And I feel like this is a weird nucleus of that fear. Like, the crush is like a nucleus of that fear, but it's actually great that it is, because it shows that Cary Elwes kind of fucking deserves it.
He and you
that
know
you put
that
it into words that I wanted to say and I could not.
Well,
so thank
well
you.
But so, okay, so a couple things. First of all, I do want to clarify, because I don't know anything about Alan Shapiro. We did get one piece of information incorrect, and I want to make sure we clarify.
Is that the writer?
Yeah, he's the writer-director. It wasn't him that was pushing for Alicia Silverstone to be naked. It was an executive at the studio.
Go figure.
Yeah, go figure. Creepy-ass executive wanted that. I just want to clarify
start
that.
With, did the last
Harvey
name rhyme with Weinstein?
Weinstein.
But no, what you guys are talking about is, like, so a couple things. A, I think it's very important in telling that there's that scene where Amy's like, you didn't say anything to mislead her. And he doesn't really have an answer.
Right.
He's just like, no. So I'm gonna reveal
everything he said.
I'm going to very vaguely reveal a little piece of my own personal shame. Although on the grand scheme of things, this is like not the most shameful thing in the world. So the scene where they're on the bridge, she kisses him and then he says, wait, we can't do this. And he stops. I have been in a situation like that with a friend who was in a relationship that leaned in, kissed me, and then I pushed them away.
Sure.
The big difference is that me and my friend had hung out a million times before, whether they were single or not, and it was just like a thing that happened because they had drank a little too much, and I was like, we can't do that. You need to stop. Don't do that again, or I will let your significant other know. But there's a whole different world when you have a 14-year-old kid who's like, let me show you something, and you get in, you have them get in your car and drive them to a romantic spot.
Yeah.
Like,
He made so many poor choices before. Yeah.
Don't let 14-year-old girls in your car. No. Unless they're your fucking child. Like, not let
you
a 14-year-old girl
are
if you are
grooming.
An adult. Yes. Yeah, I mean, this is the actual official definition of it. It's not drag queens doing story hour at the library, you assholes. It's adult men driving. Yeah, and it's a power dynamic. And mm-hmm. I feel like, I mean, I also I don't know if I've mentioned it on the show. I probably have. We've been doing this show for a decade. In one iteration or another. I spent a year working with adolescent sex offenders after college because I have a degree in sociology and I really wanted to get into social work. It is fucking...
It takes a very strong human being to do that full time.
I take it way too personally and it broke me mentally for a bit. But I worked with them and all of them... I actually know what grooming is because they are all groomed by their abusers and became abusers because they had a disordered concept of power, sexuality,
and just appropriate
interaction, human interaction, all those things. And so the reason why I want to mention that is that Adrian, Alicia Silverstone's character, it's implied that she has borderline personality disorder. Because she, at the end of the movie, she goes and she's in a mental hospital and her doctor is like, oh, she's doing so well. And then it shows her with a picture of the doctor and his wife or something like that. And she like rips the wife out of the picture.
And a 1993 version of BPD.
Yeah. Like. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But it's like that concept of, she was like, she's kind of a gaslighter. She's narcissistic, all those things. And I think that is kind of the reality of that would be so much more interesting. Instead of making her the bad guy in this, kind of like talking more about, those are bad things that she was doing, but
no doubt,
it'd be a much more interesting conversation if it was like she didn't know that she was hurting people and then maybe like fighting against it. It'd be like such a much more interesting movie.
I would love to see a version of this movie where. Well, I wouldn't love to see any version of this movie, to be honest, but with like the beats that you're taking about, if it was handled in a more like honest way, they make this subtle reference to this camp counselor that she was previously obsessed with and then murdered. But it's like, if you later found out that camp counselor had done things to her that led to her having this distorted view or something that gave more of an origin story than just bitches be crazy.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic because that's kind of the whole crux of her character in this movie is just like, women. Like should be.
I think that they touch on it a little bit in that party scene with the parents.
They're making her seem so adult, like playing the music on the piano.
Well, but it's
in front
also
of
like this weird infantilization of her where she's wearing this like not infantilization, but this de-adult. Keeping her childlike in that she's wearing a white dress. Like, it looks kind of like
her
confirmation
room
dress.
Her room reflects that,
and
she's tucking her in at night at 14 years old. Like,
and also the way that the parents kind of talk about the physicality of other people, because Red, I don't remember his real name, but Red. he goes, she got her teeth done or something like that. And the mom is like, and then he goes, I was really wondering about her tits or something like that. Mm-hmm. And they touch on it like this movie is so waspy and I feel like there are ways that they could have, like, with the 90 minutes that they gave us, there were so many more interesting ways to present the story. And it's so funny to me that this script was in, like, it was in limbo for 8 years or something. He, like, wrote it, tried to get it made for a long time, and this is the version that they accepted.
This is the version they went with.
This gives me, it gives me a what's it called, brand new cherry flavor, what's it called?
New cherry flavor.
Convince
me you were wrong.
It's also planned to, or it's supposed to look like the early 90s. And I got that feeling that they actually hit the beat on that show so well, where it's like these starlets are just getting chewed up and spit out by the casting couch in LA. And it's really weird because, like, Alicia Silverstone was an emancipated minor, so that she, at 15, and then she turned 16 when they were making this movie.
Yeah, she had no limitations on her work schedule.
Exactly.
She could do whatever
she
wanted.
That's super weird, because I wonder who made the decision. Was that her? Was she kind of, like, pushed into it by... we don't know. We can just conjecture. But I just find, like, this movie to be a much... The conversation around its creation and its missteps are way more interesting than what happens on the screen, because it kind of shows where the white male exec mindset was in 92 when they greenlit this movie.
Movies like this are super interesting to me, because, like you're saying, I mean, we're putting a lot of weight on it, but it's more interesting because it wasn't a popular movie that then came into the lexicon and, like, you know, has all, like, where, you know, it's a movie that existed and it made its money back, and then it just sort of, like,
I
think it was a movie,
though.
Yeah, okay. I think it was a movie that actually, you have to think about the time, because I think this movie came out, it did all right, like,
I think
by
it did
all
more
standards
than all right from what I read.
It doubled its budget. Yeah. Like, it was a $6 million budget. Yeah. It made $13 million. I mean, $13 million
is definitely
good.
Put Alicia Silverstone on the map.
But I was going to say, then you have, at the exact same time, you've got those Aerosmith videos dropping in late 93, early 94, because she won Best Villain and Breakout Star at the MTV Video Musical or Movie Awards. Then I'm sure she cleaned up on some Moon Men at the VMAs for all those Aerosmith music videos. So this was, in all honesty, as we were talking about this and we're talking about all the circumstances of making this movie, what I actually walked away from in the middle of our conversation was, it's really impressive that Alicia Silverstone is as well adjusted of a human being as she actually turned out to be. Like, because in the grand scheme of, like, 80s and 90s young teen actors, like, She's definitely on the side that's like, oh, she's just, like, a normal ass. Like, sort of same with, like, Sarah Michelle Gellar, who's just, like, a mom now.
Oh, she's not just a mom. She and Freddie Prinze Jr. have been married for, like, 20 years.
That's what I mean. Like, it's just like they are just so – well, look, you know my favorite thing of the Freddie Prinze Jr. story is that he just, like, took a – I think it was like a 3 or 4 year break from acting to write for the WWE, which
that
so
is your favorite thing.
Random.
I haven't listened to his podcast about it, but I've subscribed to it just to like remember that one day I will want to listen.
Well, when
to
you're
him
driving down
his...
for Creature Feature, that's
there you go.
I gotta load up, and I don't want to listen to us talk anymore. Yeah.
Fuck,
so
I'm sick of our voices.
All right, there's something that we do need to talk about with this movie.
We also need to talk about something that was in Kyle's hand a minute ago, because I have questions.
Hey,
Is it a brand new cherry flavor?
I was just at the barbecue, baby. I'm just drinking a Rolling Rock. Okay?
Dude, the fact that someone that in my sphere, my friend group, in 2023, if you would have told me when I woke up this morning that I'd watch you drink a fucking Rolling Rock, I would have expected any other shitty beer.
Can I tell you? I shouldn't say it was
you
difficult.
Can. Please
but
tell me.
I work at a package store, a liquor store, for those who are not in New England. And for a while during the pandemic, or recently, it was hard to get Rolling Rock, like the production of it, between it falling out of style severely and the pandemic. I think they just stopped making it for a while, or like really, really were low production. I couldn't get it at my own store. I had to go to literally another store, and all they had was one 12-pack left. So now I have 11 more to drink.
You have 11 more Rolling Rocks. Look, and I'm willing to bet you can get rid of those bad boys, a creature feature like that.
I'm going to bring a cooler down. We're going to have some Rolling Rock. It's going to be a blast. Oh, but my dad used, I remember, like, this was the beer. My dad doesn't drink beer, but this was a beer that he had in his fridge because he was also a young man in 93.
Oh, okay. So yes, that it's
the last time I drank a Rolling Rock was when I dressed as my dad for Halloween. So
that is
nice
a perfect story
like
for today. Then I love that.
All right, so I have two things that I want us to talk about before we completely tie a bow on the crush. First off,
because it's a little girl and it wears bows.
Jesus Christ. First off, I think I may have even said this when we did the Bad Dreams episode. But Jennifer Rubin has got to be one of the most underappreciated, attractive women of the late 80s, early 90s. Like, I wanted so much more of her in this movie. I was like, she's quirky. She's cute. She actually is, in my opinion, the best character in the movie. She has the best moral ground.
Well, she's the only one who's blameless, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, everybody
else is pretty shitty.
Everybody else sucks.
I mean, Cheyenne is okay, but
Cheyenne's doing the best that a 14-year-old can possibly do with the situation she's in. But then we got to talk about. So this movie was just kind of there. It was on my screen for the most part. I felt ick, and then other times I was just like, "This is kind of dull." Then we get to the last 10 minutes, and we've got this fucking carousel in the attic set piece, and. Let me clarify that Matt Kelly in no way condones or supports violence against women. But when Alicia Silverstone gets punched in the face and goes fucking flying, I was like, this whole movie's worth it. That is the most ridiculous decision this movie could have possibly chosen.
The thing was like
a Looney Tunes cartoon. I didn't know what the hell was happening.
And you know,
she
and
got
I
punched
felt,
by One Punch Man.
I felt that like... certain people watching this might have been like, yes, she finally got punched. She had it coming. I was just more under the impression of like, I cannot believe they punched her off this carousel. Good for them. I love that
just
for them.
Like it literally is like a kung fu movie. She went flying. Oh my God, that killed me. And also, I have a lot of questions about the hospital that she's at because there is no way any of those hospitals would have actually mailed the letters on her behalf. Like when he's got that scene where he's got like 50 letters, I'm like, no, never in a million fucking years.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass to Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come, baby, come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
Meanwhile, in New Jersey.
So, Marissa, what talking points do you want to hit on in this week's episode?
Well, Jackie, let's talk about how the film addresses the patriarchy. Ooh, and representation of marginalized people. Ooh, and even philosophical ramifications of good versus evil in horror.
We can point out the triangle boobs, talk about the blood splatter, and the practical effects. And also the male gaze.
My gaze at the males.
Hi-yo! From feminism to fangirling, the Jersey Ghouls cover all the bases of horror from a woman's perspective.
New episodes are uploaded every other Sunday.
Just search Jersey Ghouls to find us on social media and your favorite podcasting app.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass to Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come, baby, come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast. Come, baby, come, baby, baby, come,
come. But, all right, well, according to Scott, we're going to keep rolling into 1993 next week. But before we do that, Kyle, do you have a double feature that you would want to watch with the crush?
I do. I do. I'm going to pick one, a movie that happened 9 years earlier. It is a movie that also just has, like, I don't want to say it's as sleazy, but it sort of has this, like, semi-all-American drama that, like, people have to figure out. Scream for Help by Michael Winner, who was written by Tom Holland. It's a movie that I'd love to watch for the show if we haven't already.
Yeah, we haven't. I got the Blu-ray from Scream Factory when it came out.
I mean, it's similar vibes. I would say it's more thriller than horror, but I think it also works with what we talk about here. Yeah. And that would be my pairing for this one.
All right. How about you, Scott?
Well, I thought that I was going to be so clever by mentioning Bad Dreams as my double feature, and you got to it in your last 5 minutes before we got to our double feature section. So I don't know if we
can still
but I just want to see more Jennifer Rubin. She's a delight. Bad Dreams is just so silly, and I've only seen it once for the show.
Yeah.
But, I mean, if it really came down to it and I wasn't able to do that, I have a backup that I would like to mention after, Matt, you do your double feature.
So I picked a movie that I don't remember what year this movie came out, but it had to have been in the ballpark same time. I want to say this was either the same year or maybe a year or two after the fact. And what I wanted to focus on was throughout this movie, all these terrible things are happening to the main character. And when he tries to explain that it's Alicia Silverstone's character doing it, they're like, she's just a kid. She's just a kid. She couldn't possibly do that. So I'm going with the Elijah Wood, Macaulay Culkin film, The Good Son, which is another like kind of mid-90s thriller where it's like, how could this cute, precocious kid possibly do this?
Yeah,
like so that was what was running through my head while watching this. I'm trying really hard to not do the same like 8 movies that I always
did. Yeah. Well, and I was going to say if Bad Dreams is a no-go, I can get an equal amount of ick from another Kyle pick. Did not mean to rhyme, but it came out that way.
Do it. Anytime, baby.
Butcher Baker and Nightmare Maker gave me a very similar ick to the crush. So thanks for that, Kyle. I appreciate you doing that to me.
You know what you could throw out too, just because, and this also falls in line with like useless IMDb trivia that could exist, but I don't know if it does because I didn't look at the IMDb trivia. So Jennifer Rubin in this movie gets killed by wasps. She later on, or beforehand, I don't remember, goes on to be in the remake of The Wasp Woman.
Dude, that's on my list!
Yeah. The remake?
You've been wanting to do the 95 Wasp Woman, that's right.
Good.
This is just the origin story to that one. Dude, that should have been your pick for next week. We should have just literally treated this like a prequel. All right, Kyle.
We're never in cahoots like that.
Watch, read, listen to anything that you want to promote.
Yeah. So Carly and I just got a new TV. I got a new TV for Christmas. I didn't even realize that like the TV I was using like was barely HD. Do you know what I mean? It was like preliminary HD. And I watched.
And you christened that bad boy with the crush?
Well, you wish. No,
so let's see what this HD can do.
I actually watched the crush on the old TV downstairs that I moved downstairs
Cathode
to
Ray.
Literally watch bullshit. No, I watched. And we were supposed to christen it with, because I also got a 4K player. We were supposed to christen it with Nope, but we've been waiting for my cousins. Like the time, like we want to have a fiesta.
Seems to be a thing that you do. Yeah, we understand.
Yeah.
So, Carly and I started watching a movie. We're only 45 minutes in, but we started watching Shark Lake with Dolph Lundgren from 2015. And right now, I don't know. I mean, there is a shark.
Shark Lake, Nope. I mean, equal level, I guess, to start off that 4K experience.
Yeah. I mean, we've been watching other stuff too, but as far as like sitting down and watching a movie. Oh, no. I take it back. No, we watched The Master first.
Okay.
We did. But it was a DVD of The Master. It didn't feel like, you know, it didn't do anything.
It didn't feel quite like Shark Lake.
Yeah, it didn't feel like Shark Lake. which is, if I can just interest anybody in bad Dolph Lundgren movies, bad shark movies, movies that promote a shark that 45 minutes in are barely shark related. It takes place at Lake Tahoe. There's a lot of great stock footage in there.
You're acting like you have to twist my arm when I know for a fact I sent you guys a 10-second clip of me watching Steven Seagal's Hard to Kill on Friday.
Yeah. So we're all on the same page. Yeah. Scott especially. Scott loves this stuff. Shark Lake. I'm not done with it, but man, am I enjoying it.
Yeah, you're milking it.
I'm truly milking it.
How about you, Scott? What have you been savoring, watching?
We have been savoring this. The Willow TV series is
fun.
So fun. Oh, my God. It is so goofy.
Literally just finished it 10 minutes ago before coming up
here. I mean, it's... So I watched what I like to call Stupid Witcher, which was Witcher Blood Origin. Thank goodness it was only 4 episodes long because it looked good, but it was the dumbest fucking storyline. And I just feel like... what they did with Willow is so great because they basically were like, let's just make a comedy with swords and magic and, you know, put a little bit of Willow in it. You know, like, and I also love that Warwick Davis is in it and he's so fun. And then his daughter plays his daughter, like his real life daughter plays Mims. And she's just such a sweetheart and it is just really, really fun, and it looks good, you know? Yeah. Like,
Willow,
I don't think
reminds
it was cheap.
Me, the Willow series almost feels more like it's obviously very much a sequel to the first Willow, like the Willow movie, but in a lot of ways, it kind of reminded me, like, it almost felt like a sequel to Kroll. Like, it's a lot of that energy.
Lighter energy. Yeah, like, the stakes just seem... like
palpable.
it's a good time. And I really I just enjoyed how it did not take itself seriously at all, but it also still has love for the source material. So I highly recommend to anybody.
I also love the choice that every closing credit song is like wildly not accurate to the time period. Like
that,
like
that
the whole
Black Hole Sun cover is great. Really good.
Yeah.
And I don't even like that song.
So I've got two things that I'm going to mention. One's a book. One is a documentary that at the time that we were recording literally dropped yesterday.
I
was just a 90-minute doc. I watched it the day it came out. Because I was kind of looking forward to it. Because it's very rare. We're in this time where we get a lot of true crime documentaries. And... most of it is either before my time or like stuff that I didn't know about. But Netflix dropped a true crime doc about something that I was following very closely as it was happening because I was a child of the internet, which was the documentary The Hatchet Wielding Hitchhiker, which is the story of Kai, the guy who went viral for his like interview when, for those of you who don't remember, there was an incident where a man in a very racist bigot way smashed into a black construction worker and was trying to kill him with his car, and there was a hitchhiker in the car, and when a woman went to try to help the people in the car, this psychopath tried to choke her. So the guy in the passenger seat had a hatchet with him because he was a hitchhiker and he needed it for protection, and he hit the guy 3 times and stopped him, like incapacitated the guy. And when he got interviewed, he was just like this surfer stony dude with curly hair. And like he would say all these weird things and people just became in love with him. He was like the equivalency of like the double rainbow guy mixed with like the, you know, lock your window, hide your kids, hide your wife. Like it was that that perfect intersect of the two. And then 3 months later, he actually murdered somebody.
Oh.
And it was like and it tells the story of how this guy went from like national sensation to like want it for legitimate, like, out of nowhere murder. And it tells it in a really interesting way. It's kind of, again, one of those stories where like, man, if people had said something, like the producers of Keeping Up with the Kardashians wanted to make a full reality show about him and then met with him and was like, this dude's fucking unhinged. There's absolutely no way that we can do this. But it's like you sit there and you're like, then why didn't you say something? I don't know. So it hits a lot of that. If you're into true crime, I think it's very well done. Netflix is pretty good at keeping things very like down the middle. They don't draw any lines. They let you as the viewer kind of piece it together. And then my favorite writer, Chuck Klosterman, last year put out a book called The 90s. So my favorite writer put out a book about my favorite decade.
Yep.
And Chuck Klosterman's not really a narrative writer. He's put out maybe two fictional books. He's mostly essays. Mm-hmm. His most famous book was Sex, Drugs, and Cocoa Puffs, which was just a collection of essays about pop culture. The 90s is literally just, it's that. It's a series of essays trying to explain the decade. And as someone who loves the 90s, he does a great job of really explaining why that decade is so uniquely different than almost any other. And in doing so, he talks about a lot of stuff that I've said. Like, it's very rare that you find a decade where the most critically acclaimed stuff was also the most commercially successful stuff. Like, the idea that, like, Pulp Fiction would be this massive critically beloved movie that won the Best Picture Award, but was also like one of the most seen movies in theaters simultaneously and like had a culture around it, and like that Clerks could pop off and that like grunge could pop off. Like, it was this very weird time where
that Venn diagram almost became the circle.
This became a circle, and it's analyzing like what made us so jaded, and it does a really good job of trying to pinpoint that. He's an interesting writer. It's an interesting book. If any of what I just said sounds interesting, read it. I was in Asbury Park, New Jersey, and any second that I had free, I had the book in my backpack, and I would just like find a quiet place to sit down and keep reading it, because I was like, I'm just so invested in it.
That's just such a nice thing to have anyway. Yeah. Like, no matter the book or the content, like, just having something that you're like, yes, let me fucking read this. I love that.
Yeah. So it was that was a big one for me. So if you love the 90s, I bet you loved The Crush from 1993. So stay tuned as our journey into the early to mid 90s continues next week. And until then, we'll just be hanging out here at Horror Movie Night.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come baby come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
Meanwhile, in New Jersey.
So Marissa, what talking points do you want to hit on in this week's episode?
Well, Jackie, let's talk about how the film addresses the patriarchy. Ooh, and representation of marginalized people. Ooh, and even philosophical ramifications of good versus evil in horror.
We can point out the triangle boobs, talk about the blood splatter, and the practical effects. And also the male gaze.
My gaze at the males.
Hi-yo! From feminism to fangirling, the Jersey Ghouls cover all the bases of horror from a woman's perspective.
New episodes are uploaded every other Sunday.
Just search Jersey Ghouls to find us on social media and your favorite podcasting app.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.